An exhibit at the Atlanta History Center looks at the life of Thomas Jefferson's estate, Monticello, through the eyes of more than 600 enslaved people who lived there and their descendants. In part two of my conversation with Rex Ellis and Elizabeth Chu, who helped to shape the exhibit at its previous home, Washington, D.C.'s Smithsonian Institute, we hear some of the voices of Jefferson's descendants who are featured in the exhibit.
In 1993, historians at Monticello started an oral history project called Getting Word as a way to balance the incredible, you know, staggering weight of the written evidence, you know, by Jefferson and others with the scarcity of firsthand accounts by slaves. They identified, located, and spoke to almost 200 descendants, and these incredible stories came out.
Could you introduce us to one of the descendants?
Sure. I'll do my favorite one. She's on this panel right over here in the corner. So this beautiful lady's name was Virginia Craft Rose.
I mean, the things that we were told was that slavery was a terrible thing. And we were proud that we were being educated and that we were going to school and that we were having good jobs.
And I love her interview because this one quote just perfectly captures everything about what we've learned about the families. We couldn't forget slavery,
but we could overcome it. That was the theme of our family.
Mrs. Rose is a descendant of Joseph and Edith Fawcett. Joseph Fawcett was the head blacksmith at Monticello, and his wife, Edith Hearn Fawcett, was the head cook. Joseph Fawcett was freed in Jefferson's will, but Edith and their 10 children were not. Joseph moved into the town of Charlottesville and plied his trade for over 20 years to earn the money to purchase the freedom of his wife and children, and then the family relocated eventually to Cincinnati. One of their descendants was William Monroe Trotter, who, with W.E.B. Du Bois, was one of the founders of the Niagara Movement, which became the NAACP. William Monroe Trotter's niece was Mrs. Rose that I was just quoting a moment ago.
One of the other stories, one told by Margaret Diamond Priestley, she speaks about the fact that although her family could have passed as white, they spoke out about their black heritage.
We spoke always about who we were. We did not want to be mistaken for white. You know, of course, that's such an interesting thing because now everybody is trying to talk about both sides and what a rich heritage that is. But my mother in particular would only emphasize the black part of the family.
It's such a complicated story. Sally Hemings' two youngest sons were Madison and Eston Hemings, and both were freed in Jefferson's will and both moved to Chillicothe, Ohio. Madison Hemings stayed in southern Ohio, became a landowner, had a large family. His younger brother Eston and his family, 10 years later, moved to Madison, Wisconsin, where they took the surname Jefferson and lived as white people. This is an incredibly interesting phenomenon in that racial identity and skin color aren't necessarily one and the same.
Isn't it also important that there are no absolutes in this? Madison made a decision that influenced and impacted his children and his family for their entire lives. He was going to forever look white, but identify as black. Eston made a decision. Maybe he was thinking about the future of his children and how passing as white might in some way give them a better future. They made the decisions that were decisions they felt were best for them during that time. And that's one thing that I hope we are able to suggest in this, is that if we look at everything through a 21st century framework, we won't learn a great deal. But if we try to look at the fact that here's a man who was born with a system of slavery surrounding him and died in the same way, it might help us understand the history of who he was and why he was who he was.
Rex Ellis, Associate Director of the National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C., with Elizabeth Chu, a curator at Monticello in Virginia. My colleague Kate Sweeney produced that story.